Tonight on Arena, Sound of Metal, Sequin in a Blue Room, and A Common Crime with the movies up for review. And we speak with Belfast band New Pagans about their debut album. +51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. And it's with films that we will start on this Thursday evening up for review. Sequin in a Blue Room, the story of a teenager who's exploring his sexuality through an obsession with anonymous, no-strings sexual encounters. Argentinian film. A Common Crime, where a woman is tormented by guilt when she comes to believe that her actions contributed to someone being killed. We'll start, however, with the 6 Oscar nominations garnered by Sound of Metal, the story of a heavy metal drummer's life being thrown into freefall when he begins to lose his hearing. I'm joined by Caro Doherty and Paul Whittington. An interesting setup, I suppose, in this particular film, Sound of Metal. Paul, give us an idea of what's involved.
Yeah, it's a very interesting. The idea has been knocking around for a while. Kian France came up with it and was going to direct it himself at one point. And Darius Marder, rather, took over. Rhys Ahmed, who's Oscar nominated and deservedly so, plays Ruben, who's a drummer, as you say, in a death metal or punk metal band with his girlfriend Lou, who's played by Olivia Cooke. They tour small venues across the middle America. They live together in a customised RV and they seem kind of happy, but there are problems. Both are recovering addicts, and at one point the camera hints that Lou has self-harmed and may even have attempted suicide. Anyway, one morning after a concert, Ruben begins to notice that his hearing is impaired, and at first he's in denial, and then that becomes the driving force of the whole film.
Right, well, let's actually get a scene, a short clip from quite early on, that scene where you're talking about Ruben has realised that his hearing is gone. He's drumming on stage when it happens. He leaves the stage, runs outside gasping for air. Lou follows him out. And what we hear now is the scene from Ruben's point of view. There you go, a scene there from Sound of Metal. It really is disorientating, or at least it was for me, Cara, when that scene happens quite early on. You're wondering, what are they doing with the sound here? What's actually going on? But it gives you a sense of the type of disorientation that the character of Ruben himself is going through.
It's quite remarkable. Like you say, at the start, I was quite confused. I was like, is this me? I'm not sure what's going on here. And the more we get into it and we realise this is now how he is hearing things. And it gets worse as he goes along. He's told he has 80% hearing loss. And if he wants to save that last 20%, he needs to get away from music and everything that's loud in the hopes of sort of being able to salvage that little bit of sound. But it, as daft as it may sound to hear, I kind of assumed when people, if they were in the process of going deaf, that maybe the things would just become quieter or more muffled. I didn't realise that static, that jumbled and distorted. And I just thought that was astounding that's what people have to go through. And it's amazing the way it's done. And then when sound returns to how hearing people hear it, everything is so loud in the film. And it makes you just realise that actually, if you can hear, our environments are so noisy around us, but we've obviously become accustomed to that as well.
Often when I'm watching these screeners, I turn on subtitles anyway so that you catch everything. But this is actually, even if you don't turn on the subtitles, it's captioned and it's there. Everything is described in the way it would be if you had subtitles on Netflix or on any other video platform, which I guess is for those who are deaf as well, who are watching the film. And interesting, Paul, that there are deaf actors and hearing actors involved in the piece.
Yeah, there are. And Sean, I tried to turn the captions off at the start, as I usually do, and then I realised that you can't. But this would be a very interesting film without the sound production, but the sound production is extraordinary. But yes, as you say, there are hearing people and deaf people in the film, and his journey, it's almost Reuben, that is, he almost goes through the seven stages of grief because he goes to stay in the sanctuary run by this very interesting Vietnam veteran called Joe, who's played by Paul Ratchie. And his centre, his refuge, his learning place, their whole philosophy is that being deaf is not a handicap. It's not something you need to fix. But Reuben has it in his head that if he pays $40,000 for this cochlear implant, he will get his own life back.
And that debate, does that become an important part of the film, Cara? This the idea that, you know, rather than try to, in inverted commas, fix deafness, you accept the deafness and change your life accordingly. Is that an important theme and topic?
It is. It's a big theme in it. The centre that that Reuben goes to, that their whole foundation is first learning how to be deaf and how to be deaf in a hearing world, but also learning to accept that and not seeing it in any way as a disadvantage. And it's very new to him, and he's obviously in shock and he's startled, and he just wants his old life back. But Joe, who runs the centre, very much wants him to understand that if he is to stay with their community, he needs to learn to embrace being deaf and not see it in any way as something that will hinder him. But obviously for somebody that has just happened to, it's a very traumatic thing, so that decision weighs very heavily.
Yeah, we were talking about this upstairs, the difference between somebody who is perhaps deaf from birth or deaf from a very young age versus somebody who suddenly becomes deaf in adulthood, that I suppose there are big differences involved there. However, Paul, this isn't just a film about the story of Reuben's deafness and what happens to his hearing. It's also about addiction. It's about the world of rock and roll and the type of life that's lived there. Let's listen to a clip between Lou. She's the singer in the band and in a relationship with Reuben. They have to separate, obviously, as Reuben undergoes counselling for his hearing loss, and she knows just how destructive things can be when they're together, but she doesn't want to separate, and there's strong language in this clip.
Ah, Jesus, Lou, come on.
Reuben, you hurt yourself? Reuben, you hurt yourself? You hurt me. I'll hurt myself too.
Yeah.
Promise. Say it, Ruby, or all of this is for shit. Say it. Promise. Go back there right now. Promise. Say it.
I promise if you...
No, say it. Promise. Go back to that place.
I need you to wait for me. Okay? You're it for me, Lou. You're my fucking heart. You're it for me. Okay? You gotta wait for me. Listen to me. Listen. When you get there, I need you to write to me, okay? Yeah? Will you write me? Will you tell me you're okay? Huh? Promise me? And listen, if it's bullshit, you just get your ass back here. I'll fix it. I swear to God. You know I'll fucking fix this. It's not that hard, okay? Just come back here.
I love
My
you.
Fucking heart. Okay?
Olivia Cooke as Lou and Riz Ahmed as Reuben there in a scene from Sound of Metal. Paul, as I say, clearly a lot more at play here than the story of the deafness. But 6 Oscar nominations, does it deserve them? Do you think it'll win some of them?
Whether it'll win some is another question entirely. I think obviously for sound production it will. It's a given. Riz Ahmed is up against some, you know, like people like obviously the late Chadwick Boseman and so on. So I don't know, but he certainly would be a deserved winner if he did win. It's a very interesting film. I think it's very rare for films to make you think, and also to, at the same time, to make you understand just how much you take for granted every day. So yeah. I think it's a very special film.
Stars from you, Paul?
Yeah, I think I'd go for, as much as I love half stars, as you know, Sean, I think I'll go for a full 5 on this one.
A full five?
Yeah, full 5, yeah.
I thought you were saying a 4 or 5 because you didn't want to say 4.5. It's a 5, a full 5 from you. And Cara, it is a long film. I wondered, did it take a long time to set itself up, or does it merit its almost 2 hours of viewing?
I think it is a tad on the long side. It is a wonderful film, and really Riz's performance is amazing. But I just couldn't go to the 5. It just needed a bit of a trim in there for me.
Right.
I would have said 4, but you know, I'm going to annoy Paul now and say 4.5. I know he's
4.5.
That is annoying. Yeah.
Okay, so 5 and 4.5 for Sound of Metal from Karen Paul. Let's move on then to film number 2, Sequin in a Blue Room. I beg your pardon. A chance encounter at an anonymous sex party. A boy hunts through the world of a hookup app to track down the mystery man involved. It's a story of a young gay. He's a boy turning into a man. He's in his teens somewhere, but it's not. Not about his discovering his sexuality. It's not a coming out film. This is really about online sex and the perils of the online world, Cara.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's refreshing that it's not a coming out. We need to see more stories about gay people that just aren't around coming out. But it is about, and I sound like an old person to say this, but the fear of how online dating and dating apps are literally at the end of a fingertip. And you've got a 16-year-old boy who is full of raging hormones. He knows that he can attract older men. He has form with that. And when you're raging hormones and you've literally got a city of men waiting for you, it's very hard to swipe. I'm not sure what direction you go for not wanting it. Either way, he spends far too much time out there hooking up with older men, and because he is just a kid, he gets out of his depths, and he really, he should be hanging around with lads his own age. I sound like a mammy now.
Yeah, he does find himself in a lot of trouble, and I suppose it is as much, it could be a heterosexual story as much as a homosexual story in that respect. This, the nature of hookup sex, again, to sound like somebody's daddy at this point in time, Paul. But it is important here that it's not making a judgment around casual sex or anything like that. The film, it really is about, you have a think about what you're doing when you swipe, whatever way it is, right or left.
Yes, I think it is. I mean, I agree, it could be a film about heterosexuals, except for the fact that when he goes to this club in the middle of it and meets this person he falls in love with, or sees this person he falls in love with, you're in a world, you know, unleavened by any female influence. So that's a difference. And I think the other sort of key encounter he has is with this young fella called Tommy at his school, is played by Simon Croker. And Tommy is where he should really be, because Tommy is still going, am I gay? Am I not gay? The way somebody would have a long time ago. And he's, you know, looking at graphic novels, and he's trying, and he's tentatively asking Sequin out. But Sequin is way beyond that. He has a kind of addiction to this casual sex. And when he meets this older married man who goes by the moniker B, he ends up in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it really does become nasty. But let's listen to it. It's so cute that the way the relationship is growing between Tommy and Sequin. And here's a scene. Simon Croker is Tommy, Sequin played by Conor Leach, and Tommy wants to ask Sequin out.
What are you doing after this?
Going to class?
No, I mean, after school.
Oh, undecided yet?
Yeah. Hey, a few of us were thinking of going to the movies tonight. Some cheesy love story, I'd rather die, but we thought it'd be a good way to knock out this assignment. Might even smuggle in some vodka cruises.
Whoa. Well, have fun.
Well, would you like to come join us?
Are you asking me on a date?
No. I could.
Okay,
Really? Awesome. Cool.
Oh, that you just want to take him home and mind him. That's Tommy, played by Simon Croker, asking Sequin, played by Conor Leach, out on a date. I'm not sure that I fully agree with Paul. I thought Tommy was pretty clear on where his sexuality was in this case, but he's so shy and so innocent in comparison to the experience of Sequin, Cara.
Yeah, I think so. I think that Sequence is miles ahead in some aspects. But really, at the end of the day, he is just a 16-year-old kid who's gotten so caught up in this world, and he's not ready for it yet. He needs to find the balance between Tommy and the older men that he's been hanging out with at night. So there's balance to be found. So let's hope himself and Tommy worked out and had a nice pace and figure things out together.
Yeah, for sure. It's a film that, a bit like Sound of Metal, Paul, when it starts out, I wasn't sure what world I was in, particularly when we went into this blue room, this anonymous sex room that the parties take place, where there are no names, no contacts, no follow up, no strings attached. But as it moved along, it kind of opens itself up in a very moving type of way.
Yeah, it does. And another interesting thing that it gets at, Sean, is the contrasting experiences of gay men across different generations. Because B, this rather angry man whose phone he steals, the older man he meets, he obviously came from a time and place in Australia where it was too high a risk for him to admit who he really was. Whereas Sequin, his dad, is this very, you know, his dad is, you know, totally understanding of everything and asks him about his dates and everything. So it's just things have moved on, but the challenges are still there. They're just different.
Yeah, and we should point out, you mentioned it there, Paul, it is an Australian film. Not that that makes any difference particularly, but it is an Australian film. Yeah. And the Sequin that he has is a kind of a handle that he has online regarding a top that he wears. By the way, you can all stop pretending that you don't know that you swipe right for a yes at this point in time, the pair of you. let us move on then. Oh, sorry, I didn't get stars from you for that. From you, first of all, Paul.
I like this film. I saw it first over a year ago and I had to watch it again. But it's 4 stars for me. I liked it. I thought it was an interesting film.
And what are you saying, Cara?
I'm going the same. I'm going with 4. I'm very interested to see what young Sequin Conor Leach does in the future.
He's very good.
Very interesting actor, yeah. Okay, so 4 from both of you there for Sequin in a blue room. So far, so good in terms of your movie experiences. Let's move on to A Common Crime, an Argentine drama starring Elisa Caricajo, who as a woman whose mind shatters under the weight of collective guilt. Tell us a bit about the character of Cecilia here, played by Elisa Caricajo. As I say, her life in Argentina, Cara.
She's a very successful college professor. She's a single mum, and she has a housekeeper, Neb, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. And the only thing that she's not capable of doing is cooking. Other than that, she's a very capable woman. Mm. And she is set to become the next sort of head professor in her university. So she's really... her aging professor is now about to retire, and she's a shoo-in to get that job because she ticks all the right boxes. She's progressive, she knows her stuff, and she's a solid, successful woman.
However, all of that side of her life is great, but she will regret one decision, or she seems to be regretting one decision that she makes. She doesn't let her housekeeper's son into the house at one point along the way, and that will haunt her forever. It's really about guilt. Is that what we're dealing with here, Paul?
Yeah, and it's about middle class guilt, Sean, and it's complicated further by the whole history of the disappeared in that part of the world, and even recently where there's a real problem with disappearances involving the police. She makes this decision not to let Kevin, who she's only met once and didn't particularly take a shine to, Nebe's son, and it's night. It's at night and it's raining and he's banging on the door. So, I'm not sure how appropriate her guilt is in the end, but it gets to her and she begins to imagine that Kevin's unquiet spirit is haunting her. The pace of this film I actually really liked. It's very un-American, if you like, in the sense that it's very slow. It's all about suggestion and, as you say, her psychological trauma, I suppose you could say. But it's very nicely done, I thought.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the pace of the film, Cara, so I'll come to you on that. Paul, liking that particular pace, but I wondered sometimes in these situations where you have where you're not quite sure whether the person is feeling guilty or whether the person, in fact, there's a question around their mental health. Is that line well demarcated, or in fact, should it not be demarcated? Should you be asking that question all along the way?
She really gets so rattled. She begins to, she even checks on her little son at night to make sure he's still alive. She becomes so erratic. And I terrible thing to say, maybe I'm not quite sure if somebody would really go that far off the rails through guilt. So I just wondered if maybe there was something in her past, and I just would have liked to have seen that played out a bit more. It's a very, very extreme reaction. A terrible thing happens, but you know, it was a horrible night. some man comes banging on your door in the middle of the night, you're a single mum, really, would you let somebody in? I just thought it was just very extreme. It's very claustrophobic and it's really well done in those scenes, but is it a horror? Is it a social conscience film? I think it just gets a bit lost in what it's meant to be.
Yeah, a lot of it then, I presume, for you, Paul, in that it worked for you in that respect. A lot of it is down to Elisa Katakakos' performance.
Yeah, I think her performance is terrific, but she starts the film, she seems like this warm and open-hearted woman, and she's a shell by the end. I would say there's two things in terms of her reaction. The first is her very close friendship with Nebe, and that involves a certain amount of middle-class guilt as well, because she has a maid and she's probably not entirely comfortable, so she makes her friend. And the second thing then is this whole backdrop of the disappeared, and she feels somehow implicated in that. So for me, that then justified her reaction.
So overall, it worked, I think, for you a lot better than it did for Cara. So what are you saying in terms of stars, Paul?
I'm giving it 4 stars, Sean. I really liked it, I have to say.
Cara, was it that lack of clarity, or for you the sudden change that was the problem in your mind? She was gone off the rails too quickly. Was that the problem in the film?
It was more. I think it's two things: that the social elements versus that kind of horror thing. I'm just not sure what it wanted to be. And like, she is excellent and she does such a good performance, but I'm just not sure if a character would go from being the way she was at the start to the end. I do think it's well worth watching, but I still couldn't give it more than a 3.
Right.
It's a good 3, if that makes sense.
A good 3 from you. So a little bit of a difference of opinion then from Paul Whittington and Cara O'Doherty there in terms of our third film, A Common Crime, released tomorrow on digital platforms. Total accord almost on the other two. Sound of Metal, available on Prime Video from April the 12th, and Sequin in a Blue Room, also available on Prime Video.